The next case is 05-2399 and 06-249, Mid-American Fire and Casualty Company versus William Heasley. Mr. Mason.
Mr. Chief Justice, may it please the court. Sean Mason on behalf of Mid-American and Midwestern Insurance Companies. I'd like to reserve 5 minutes of my time.
Watch your time there in the clock.
Thank you. The Ohio Legislature in 2721.06 stated and enumerated that the general rights conferred by the Ohio Declaratory Judgment Act shall not be limited and they should not curtailed in any manner, provided the judgment being requested will remove any uncertainty or terminate any controversy. As soon as an automobile accident happens, as soon as a fire occurs, as soon as a flood happens, there's an immediate uncertainty which arises as a result of that event. That uncertainty includes questions of coverage, questions of damage, compensatory damages, medical payments, property damages, third-party claims for consortium, as well as subrogation interests. All of those issues create uncertainty to the insurance company upon the occurrence of the event. The uncertainty will exist until the case is either adjudicated, the claim is adjudicated, resolved in some fashion through compromise, or through the statute of waiver by through the statute of limitations. The vehicle through the legislature intended the insurers to use to remove this uncertainty is the Ohio Declaratory Judgment Act. This case is not about Scott Ponser. This case is not about Goliath. This case is broader than even Mr. Heasley's claim for UIM coverage here.
Is it your hope that I'm trying to figure out what the implications of this case would have if we would hold for you? Declaratory judgment action, as you know, is usually filed to resolve a legal issue in a case where there's a real dispute between two parties. Here there's no dispute. Plaintiff says, I agree. I'm not entitled to under Gladys. I'm not entitled to any benefits. So is it your hope that this would be res judicata if you get to a future action if the General Assembly were to change the law or if this court were to change the law? Is that what you're looking for?
Well, two responses to that question, Your Honor. First of all, what we're looking for is the second prong of the statute. The other basis under the Act to permit a declaratory judgment action is uncertainty. Certainly, in the past and through most of this court's decisions, it's focused on whether there's a removal of a controversy. The statute also applies to a second area, and that's uncertainty. I don't agree that there's been a controversy resolved here. The Cuyahoga County Court gave Mr. Heasley the option, when we filed a motion to dismiss his claim, of agreeing and ordered them to respond in some fashion. They never responded. If there was their intent that they did not want to preserve a right to file a claim in the future, if there was their intent to agree that there was no claim or dispute regarding this incident, they could have simply entered such a stipulation. Rather, upon some oral notification, nothing was ever put in writing, the court voluntarily dismissed their claim, reserving the right to refile. The reserving of the right to refile did not eliminate the controversy, but more importantly, and the point that appellants are making here, is it didn't remove the uncertainty that all accidents have, both economic and non-economic, with regard to the occurrence.
Uncertainty, okay, not uncertainty as to what the law may become.
I'm not going to.
There's no uncertainty as to what the law is today.
They want.
But your uncertainty is to factual situations then, or consequences of. That arise, not legal consequences.
Though they are legal consequences, Your Honor, because what you have, Chief Justice, is you have a situation where the accident occurs, the insurance company has to take appropriate steps economically. Their investors and shareholders have to make certain, they have to make certain that the investors and shareholders are protected. Reserves have to be set, allocation of resources, investigations must be done to determine whether or not the claim is ever advanced is not truly relevant.
So this is a reserve issue then. Is that what I'm trying to get to the bottom, because this is such an unusual case, and that's I'm trying to find out what's really driving this case.
Is the right of the insurance company to have the same right as any other citizen in the state of Ohio to go into court and have either a controversy or uncertainty that they believe exists adjudicated. I'm not going to disagree that change of the law which this jurisprudence has seen over the last 10 years, is part of the principle or part of the issue here. But that is not a fear, it is an uncertainty. Whether the law will ever change is an uncertainty, which is just as equal of an uncertainty as the economic risks that if the claim gets advanced. Some of these claims will last up to 15 years. We learned through the litigation process that witnesses die, memories certainly fade over 15 years, records get lost, policies get destroyed, and there's an inability to adjudicate the claim as well 15 years post the accident. The uncertain shareholder.
So how much do you suppose your insurance company reserved to cover the cost of a frivolous appeal?
Well, Your Honor,
that's what it seems to me you're doing.
I don't believe this is a frivolous appeal. There are issues at stake. There is uncertainty.
What?
And
what
risk.
Issue?
The accident can be filed. Heasley can file. Any claimant can file on behalf of the accident. Gladys did not terminate their right to file. Respectfully,
Your Honor. Well, the Constitution protects the right to file. Everyone has the right to file all the time. So I suppose after every automobile accident, theoretically for a 2-year period, or if there are minors involved, till the age of majority, somebody has the right to file.
That's correct, but the statute also states, declaratory judgment states, that the insurance company, if it perceives uncertainty, and it can establish through facts uncertainty. This case was dismissed upon the complaint. The court.
Well, after Gladys came out, your opponent said, we're done.
But they didn't say that, Your Honor. They reserved the right to refile. There cannot be a dispute or debate that they can file the action.
Did they not stipulate that they felt Gladys controlled?
No, they did not, Your Honor. In fact, if you look at the record in Cuyahoga County, the judge ordered, in response to our motion dismissed based on Gladys, the judge ordered them to respond. They never responded, but rather instead, upon some oral notification to the court, which nothing was in writing, the court 41A'd the case as if it never existed, and with the reserves of right.
Am I incorrect that the plaintiff notified a court or in the Court of Appeals said there's no Ponzer claim because of Gladys?
My understanding of the record, Your Honor, is that
were you there?
No, I was not at the trial court when that happened. I was at the Court of Appeals. Actually, nobody showed up for the Court of Appeals argument, so I was there by myself. But with regard to, I submit page 8 of the merit brief, there's a concession by.
So you're by yourself in the Court of Appeals arguing that this case should go on.
Exactly.
And they disagreed with you.
They disagree, but this is not just about this case, Your Honor. This is about the interpretation of the Declaratory Judgment Act. It doesn't need to be Mr. Heasley's claim. It could be a fire. It could be a truck accident involving 25 deaths.
Counsel, I'm sorry, but I just think you're wasting our time and every court that's been involved in this.
Well, I respectfully disagree with that position, Your Honor. We're trying to exercise our right under the Declaratory Judgment Statute. There is no dispute that if an accident occurred out here today and an employee was injured of one of the businesses in this area, and they deemed to go to the Franklin County Courthouse and file a declaratory judgment complaint, albeit a very weak argument they might have post-Gladys, could they open up the record? Could they open up the claim? I submit that based on the reading of the Declaratory Judgment Act in this court's cases, they can. That uncertainty that exists every time there's an automobile accident or a fire exists, and we have the right under the Declaratory Judgment Act to exercise our right to eliminate the uncertainty. The statute has stated, the General Assembly stated, that the only way to dismiss the action is where there is no controversy or no uncertainty to be removed. Here there is uncertainty to be removed. The economic uncertainty, the risk, policy, these insurance companies want to remove contingent liabilities. They want all claims resolved and adjudicated timely. They do not want their shareholders to be exposed to unexpected liabilities in the future. That uncertainty justifies this court to reverse and further justifies this court to order the complaint reinstated.
Your argument, I think, simply is that the plaintiff has reserved his right to refile by not dismissing with prejudice, and so you want a right to declare that right to not be worth anything, or to have the law declared in that instance.
We want the, in essence, yes, Your Honor, we want the auto accident, which triggered the possible coverage under the policy, adjudicated today, not 14 years from now, not in 2016. We would like it adjudicated today. We believe the statute gives us that right. We believe that de novo review is the appropriate standard for this. This was a dismissal beyond a dismissal of the complaint under 12b-6. We believe the court of appeals should have exercised de novo, not abuse of discretion, as the court did in the certified conflict. They used de novo.
May I ask you a question?
Yes.
Who would be the parties in this deck action if no claim is asserted by one of the persons and the employee involved in the accident? Who would be the parties that in a deck action you'd file?
Well, under the statute, we would file the deck action and name all interested parties.
So you'd be requiring a person who had asserted no claim against you to defend in a deck action lawsuit?
Your Honor, it could be resolved very quickly. They can simply say we waive our rights under the policy. Then the action would be adjudicated and the matter over. I would like to reserve the remaining time for rebuttal.
Counsel, you would suggest then that any time there's an accident, the insurance company ought to have the right to immediately file a deck action? I mean, as I understand it, you're making a distinction between a claim existing and a claim pending. And in your view, the claim does not have to be pending for a deck action.
That is absolutely true, Your Honor, with regard to the controversy analysis. But also, we believe that we're not asking the court to give us a right. We're asking the court to allow us to exercise the right the legislature has already given us to remove the uncertainty which will exist. And again, we're talking about auto accidents, but it could apply to any policy, a fire, a flood. We believe it's a general right that insurers should have as any other citizen in the state of Ohio has.
So counsel, let me understand. If there is a case pending precipitated by the plaintiff, we don't have a problem. You can file a deck action in that situation, correct?
Correct.
We're only talking about potentials here, so that the insurance industry or the insurance company here would want to file a declaratory judgment to state that there's no insurance to cover whatever the action, whatever the potential tort, whatever the loss is, speculatively.
Not speculative, Your Honor, because there is nothing in the future that has to occur before the policy is triggered. The accident happened, that triggers a question of coverage under the policy. As this court stated—
Even if no one's asking for coverage.
That's correct, Your Honor, because they don't have to ask for coverage. The accident is the trigger, and that raises the uncertainty. There is, my understanding under state insurance guidelines, there is such a reporting that accidents can be not reported, but can still be incurred as a potential loss by the insurance company, and they have to report that on their listing, incurred but not reported. There are these.
What kind of burden do you think that would place on the pockets of the insurance industry to come forward every time there's a potential for coverage and bring a deck action?
Well, Your Honor, again, I believe the statute gives us the right. They have to determine on their own cost basis which accidents they would institute a declaratory judgment process. Clearly, the accidents that involve death, involve severe possible injuries, huge exposures to the company, they want that uncertainty eliminated.
So this is
today. Basically
a preemptive strike by the insurance industry.
It's a request for negative. It's a request under the Act, as the Act allows for negative or affirmative declaratory relief. It's a request that with regard to that coverage, with regard to that accident, there's no coverage determined by the court, and it's a declaration of rights as to that accident. And I have a little bit of time left. I would like to say.
Let me ask you a different question.
Sure.
If you're looking for the immediate resolution of a disputed claim and a definition of what coverage exists, then in cases involving minors, would, in your view, a carrier be entitled to file an immediate request with the court, even though the minor might have 15 or 18 years to file a claim?
I believe the statute would permit that, Your Honor.
And that's what you'd think might occur then, if a carrier wanted to assess its, answer the chief's question, to assess what the risk might be.
Well, and again, and let's use
you think courts should be adjudicating that.
Correct. We have an accident.
Even though there's no claim pending or no case filed.
There is an accident. The accident triggers uncertainty and risk, economic risk that's real. We're not looking, the claim is not the hypothetical, will it be filed? The issue is, there is a big trucking accident on I-71. 25 people were died. We want to know today what the exposure is on that file, on that potential, even if no claims brought. The shareholders deserve a clean balance sheet. They deserve to have contingent liabilities, because there's no doubt that that's a potential liability. They want that removed. They don't want unexpected losses.
Why would that not, well, let's put it in context. As you know, the basis of the American system of jurisprudence is there has to be a dispute between two people. You can argue about whether that's the most efficient way to resolve disputes, but that's our system. And we don't give advisory, courts don't give advisory opinions. Why would the court not be asked to give an advisory opinion in the situation that Justice O'Donnell gave to you?
Two reasons. One, it's an adjudication of rights today. There's nothing that happens has to happen in the future. There's an automobile.
But there's no dispute. There are no disputing parties.
But there's uncertainty.
There have to be?
No, there doesn't, Your Honor, and that's my point. That is 2721.06, which is the most important section in the declaratory judgment statute, states that the general powers conferred by the act will not be limited unless the action will not terminate a controversy, which goes to Chief Justice's point, or remove an uncertainty. The Ohio legislature is
but
deemed
doesn't,
fit.
But remove an uncertainty where?
Uncertainty.
Why? Isn't that, don't we assume that that means between, and certainly that's been raised in the law regarding a dispute. To resolve a dispute, there's an uncertainty in the law. Two parties are disagreeing, and there's a suit filed, and the other party wants to get a resolution of the uncertain law in this case. And so declaratory judgment action is filed. Why isn't the statute limited to that situation versus just any uncertainty that someone may have? And they think they may be sued someday, and so we have to have some reserves for this. So we go to court and get the court to give us what seems to me like an advisory opinion.
Well, it's actually the antithesis of an advisory opinion, because it's an advisory opinion, as this court has stated, in Bilyeu, in fact, stated that it needs an occurrence of some future event. There is not a single future event. The accident is known. The potential damages for the accident is known. The compensatory loss, the medical damages, the property damages, all that is known. There's one basic question. Is all of that covered by the auto accident? Again, if the claimant could walk into court the day after that accident happens and say, I want coverage, why can't the insurance company walk into court and say, we want to decline coverage for everything that occurred during that accident because it's not covered under our policy? We believe the statute gives us that broader right. The issue of uncertainty is not addressed to controversy. To read the statute, statute would say controversy and uncertainty. It says controversy or uncertainty. We believe that the legislature intended a broader aspect. The economic risks to the insurance company, which could extend for up to 15 years, are real. There's real dollars involved. The insurance companies would like that eliminated, the ability to eliminate it. The claim could be realized, but they would like the decision accomplished today.
You've used your time.
Yes,
thank you, Mr. Maisel. Mr. Carney.
Good morning, and thank you, Mr. Chief Justice, and may it please the court. My name is Chris Kearney, and I represent the appellee, William Heasley. Mr. Heasley is requesting this court to affirm the decisions of the trial and appellate courts, which held that a justiciable issue is not presented in a post-Gilatus declaratory judgment action. Mr. Heasley is also requesting this court to affirm the 11th District Court of Appeals' use of an abuse of discretion standard in reviewing a trial court's determination to grant or to deny declaratory relief. When appellants MidAmerican and Midwestern filed their complaint for declaratory judgment in the trial court in April of 2004, they requested the court to determine and to declare that Mr. Heasley was not entitled to coverage under either the business auto or the umbrella policy that they had issued to his employer, Sloan Industries. More specifically, appellants requested the court to declare that Mr. Heasley was, quote, barred from recovery pursuant to the Ohio Supreme Court's decision in Westfield versus Gallatus, end quote. At the time that deck action was filed, Mr. Heasley did not dispute that he was barred from coverage by this court's decision in Gallatus.
But he said, I don't want to give up totally. I'm going to keep my right to file someday because the law changes. And so I'm going to keep my right to file. Why isn't a declaratory judgment action a very efficient way to just resolve that issue, get it out of the system? Then everybody knows they can put their reserves. They know what their reserves are. Mr. Heasley knows that I don't have a claim. I admit I don't have a claim, and so it gets resolved. Why isn't that a much more efficient way to resolve an issue like this instead of all of this time and money spent on a dispute?
The answer to that question, Mr. Chief Justice, is twofold. First of all, he did have the right, as you put it, to dismiss this case without prejudice and to reserve the right to pursue this case if at some time in the future this court eradicated or overturned the Gallatus decision, and if at some time in the future the legislature revised 393718(i)(4). He had the right to do that. In response to the second half of your question, Your Honor, the declaratory judgment statutes in Ohio do not contemplate the rendition of advisory opinions. They do not allow a trial court to pass upon remote, incidental, or moot questions. If we were to allow appellants to proceed as they would like to proceed in this case, it would open the doors to every courtroom in Ohio after every accident or incident to these insurance companies bringing these declaratory judgment actions. It is the appellee's contention that the declaratory judgment statute does not allow for that. And in response to your question, Mr. Chief Justice, I do not believe that that would be an efficient way to handle these claims.
Counsel, what is 272106? What does the phrase "or remove an uncertainty" mean? Is it? It states. It seems to be a broad section talking about the deck action, saying that relief may be sought under the chapter in which a judgment or decree will terminate the controversy, which is the point that you've been making, but or remove an uncertainty. What does that language mean?
Justice Lenziger, we would respond to that by saying that the deck statutes do provide a litigant, any litigant, whether an insurance company or other litigant, to file a declaratory judgment complaint when there is an uncertainty. However, as this court stated in Driscoll versus Cincinnati, that uncertainty has to be a real and present uncertainty. It has to be a present actual threat. And in this case, there is no present actual threat. And getting back to Driscoll versus Cincinnati, the court held that a remote or possible threat is not sufficient grounds on which to base a claim for declaratory judgment. And in this case, the appellant stated at page 6 of their brief in the 11th District, quote, there is always a possibility that the Ohio Supreme Court could readdress the Scott Ponser issue and reinstate the type of coverage eradicated by the Ohio Supreme Court in Gallatus. Given that possibility, there is still a lingering threat of future litigation. That position of the appellants clearly demonstrates that they seek an advisory opinion from this court in the event that this future hypothetical occurrence should actually take place, and that is the resurrection of Scott Ponser coverage in the state of Ohio. I think everyone in this courtroom would agree that the resurrection of Scott Ponser coverage in Ohio is not a real and present threat.
Counsel, as this unfolds, I'm also wondering exactly how certain a declaratory judgment is. It seems to me, maybe I'm incorrect in this regard, or perhaps you don't know, that there were plenty of deck cases on Ponser floating about that were decided. The appeals had run, but the underlying case, in other words, if it was decided, yes, there is Ponzer coverage, but the underlying case, the tort case, had not been resolved when Gladys came out. Those favorable rulings saying you have Ponzer coverage just washed away, didn't they, with the Gladys decision?
So, Your Honor, I will admit to you that deck
actions, if that happened, don't even provide that much certainty.
I would admit to you, Justice Pfeiffer, that I do not exactly know the answer to your question as it deals with law of the case and whether or not there was a final judgment. However, in this case, when Gladys was decided, Mr. Heasley dismissed his claims in the Cuyahoga County Court of Common Pleas against MidAmerican and Midwestern because at that point he recognized that he no longer had a valid cause of action.
Okay.
The trial court in this case correctly concluded in response to the appellant's request for an advisory opinion, quote, MidAmerican and Midwestern are requesting this court to issue an opinion just in case the law changes, to once again permit Scott Ponzer claims, and just in case Heasley chooses to refile this action. Accordingly, MidAmerican and Midwestern are seeking an advisory opinion. This court has, for 100 years at least, refused to grant advisory opinions, and it is the appellee's request that they continue to refuse to grant the issuance of an advisory opinion, which is essentially what the appellants are requesting in this case. Although this case is here based on a conflict in the appellate districts, three of the four appellate districts that have addressed these post-Gladys deck actions, the 2nd District, the 6th District, and the 11th District, have held in 7 different cases, in 7 different unanimous decisions, that these cases do not present a justiciable controversy. The sole exception is the 9th District's opinion in Indiana versus Forcemark, which, by the way, was a split decision with Judge Carr vigorously dissenting and urging the 9th District to follow the lead of the 6th District in the case of Reinbolt versus National Fire. It is the appellee's contention in this case that the 9th District misapplied the law enunciated in Allstate versus Long by the 11th District and erred in coming to its conclusion in Forcemark. The Allstate versus Long case is distinguishable from this case in 2 important manners. First of all, Allstate versus Long dealt with an assault. Long assaulted Grant. Allstate subsequently filed a deck action against Long, requesting the court that it did not have an obligation to indemnify or defend him because his actions were intentional. The assault claim and the declaratory judgment claim were consolidated by the trial court. Grant then dismissed his claims against Long without prejudice, and the trial court, holding that there was no longer a justiciable issue, dismissed the complaint for declaratory judgment. On appeal, the 11th District Court of Appeals reversed that decision, holding that the trial court should have entertained this declaratory judgment action because there was a threat of future litigation. However, that case is distinguishable for 2 reasons. First of all, in the Allstate versus Long case, when Grant dismissed his claim for assault, he still had a legally recognized viable claim against Mr. Long that was not superseded by an opinion of the Ohio Supreme Court. In this case, when Mr. Heasley dismissed his claims against MidAmerican and Midwestern, he no longer had a legally recognized viable cause of action because this court eradicated his claims in the Gladys decision. In addition, the Allstate versus Long case is distinguishable in that Long never conceded at any time that he was not entitled to coverage under the Allstate policies. Contrary to the appellant's contentions, in this case, Mr. Heasley began conceding that he was not entitled to coverage under these policies in the motion to dismiss that he filed in the trial court. Similarly, in the brief filed in the 11th District, he conceded he is not entitled to coverage under these policies, and he continued that concession in his merit brief with this court. This case is not the same as the case as the 11th District addressed in Allstate versus Long. There is no justiciable dispute in this case.
Let me take you off the subject a bit. If we were to decide that there is a justiciable issue here, as you know, courts are rather reluctant to dismiss cases for lack of a justiciable issue. Could the trial court here convert the motion to dismiss to a motion for summary judgment and rule in your favor?
Your Honor, I don't think at this point, as the proceedings stand right now, they could convert it because there has been no additional evidence submitted. All of the motions on this case were based solely on the complaint. In fact, Mr. Heasley never even filed an answer to this complaint. He simply filed a motion to dismiss. It's my understanding, and I could be incorrect, that a motion to dismiss cannot be transformed into a motion for summary judgment absent some additional evidence on the record. The appellant would have this court believe that any future threat of litigation affords an insurance company the right to pursue declaratory relief, and that is just not the case. As this court stated in Driscoll versus Cincinnati, the threat to a litigant must be real and present, not merely possible or remote. Similarly, the 11th District in Indiana versus MDO Homes stated that the threat must be of sufficient immediacy and reality to warrant the issuance of a declaratory judgment. There is no immediate threat to the appellants in this case. Turning now, Your Honors, to the second certified question, it is the appellee's contention that this court has already conclusively answered that question in Bilyeu versus Motorist Mutual. This court in the syllabus of Bilyeu held that the granting of declaratory relief is a matter for judicial discretion. And where a court determines that a controversy is so contingent that declaratory relief does not lie, this court will not reverse unless the lower court's determination is clearly unreasonable. Every single Ohio appellate district, including the 9th District in Taylor versus American Economy, has followed this court's precedent in Bilyeu versus Motorists and has applied an abusive discretion standard in reviewing a trial court's determination to grant or to deny declaratory relief. In addition, the 2nd District in Indiana versus Fox, the 6th District in Reinbolt versus National Fire, and Nationwide Agribusiness versus Reinbolt, and the 11th District in this case, Floss versus Culver, Bogger versus Sasala, and Bartlett versus Nationwide, have all applied an abusive discretion standard of review in cases identical to this case. As a result, the Court of Appeals appropriately followed this court's precedent in applying the abuse of discretion standard of review in regard to the trial court's dismissal. As a result, Mr. Heasley respectfully requests this court to affirm the decisions of the trial and appellate courts in regard to certified question number one. In regard to certified question number two, Mr. Heasley respectfully requests this court to affirm the 11th District Court of Appeals' use of the abuse of discretion standard. Thank you, Your Honors.
Thank you, Mr. Carney. Mr. Maestel, you've used your time, but you may take 30 seconds.
Thank you, Mr. Chief Justice. In that brief time, I would like to point out that every business in the state of Ohio deserves the right to eliminate uncertainty, deserves the right to have contingent liabilities removed from its books. This case is so much more than about Gladys Ponser or Mr. Heasley's claim. This is about the equal right of an insurance company as a citizen of the state of Ohio to obtain those rights afforded by the Declaratory Judgment Act. The Act, in a very unambiguous manner, sets forth that we have that right here. With regard to the way this case is presented to you, it's presented on a 12B6. This court has held for years that unless the complaint on its face, there are no set of facts beyond a doubt that can show entitlement to relief, then only then is the case properly dismissed. Here, under the Declaratory Judgment Act, If the insurance company can show uncertainty to the trial court, when we get past the motion to dismiss, we get to a motion for summary judgment, we do discovery. If they can establish economic uncertainty as a result of any automobile accident, particularly the one in the subject of the complaint, they have a right to go forward on the merits. We believe that this court's decision in Billy U does not hold. If I may continue, Mr.
Justice. You need to sum up, actually. Okay.
We just believe that this court should adopt appellant's propositions of law 1 and 2, reinstate plaintiff's appellant's complaint in the trial court, and reverse the 11th District Court of Appeals adopting the 9th District decision.
Thank you. The case is submitted. You'll be advised of our opinion.